Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Civil War. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. We had considered the story of the Levite's concubine, and how all of Israel had gathered together after this outrage was done. This man had come to a Benjamite city of Gibeah, and some of the Benjamite inhabitants of Gibeah had acted just like the men of Sodom had in the book of Genesis. Israel was shocked and appalled at such moral behavior among them, and so they had gathered together and determined to destroy Gibeah. Now Benjamin didn't come to the gathering, and Israel sent to Benjamin, saying, "What moral outrage is this done among you? Send these men of Gibeah to us so we can destroy them." But Benjamin refused. They decided to side with their city of people from their tribe. So Israel got together, prepared their army in order to attack Benjamin. But then after doing this, after making up their mind, setting their plan, determining their course, then we read in Judges 20:18, "Then the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God to inquire of God. They said, 'Which of us shall go up first to battle against the children of Benjamin?' The Lord said, 'Judah first.'" So they finally approach God about all this, once they've already made their plan. Now, shouldn't God have been consulted at the first as to what the plan should be? But instead they say, "God, we have this plan. Now, here's your little part of it. You decide who of us should go first, okay? And that means you're on our side, you're with us, so you'll have to give us the victory." Well, the Lord didn't want a little part in the events. The Lord wanted to be the center. And this just shows that their minds and hearts weren't right. And this illustrates what is really the theme, I think, of this latter part of Judges, as we have it in Judges 17 and verse 6 and Judges 21 and verse 25, which is that in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And yet the Lord ought to have been the king. They ought to have done what was right in the Lord's eyes, but they didn't. Now notice Israel is doing what is right in their eyes here, but isn't Benjamin doing the same thing? It seemed right to Israel that they should destroy the men of Gibeah for this wickedness. But it seemed right to Benjamin that they should defend the city made up of their fellow tribesmen. So really everyone, the other 11 tribes and Benjamin, are doing what was right in their own eyes. So the Israelites ask the Lord, who should go up first? And the Lord answers that question. He says, Judah first. He doesn't say he's going to be with them. He doesn't say he's going to give them the victory. He doesn't say he likes this plan of theirs. He doesn't say this is what he would have them do. He just answers their question. And he puts Judah first. And Judah, God's special ruling tribe, was always first in victory or in defeat. So they're to go first here. Verse 19. So the children of Israel rose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. So the next day they get up, they go into action, they prepare to fight against Benjamin at Gibeah. Verse 20, and the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in battle array to fight against them at Gibeah. So they set up the fight. They line up their troops. They prepare their forces. They set up the battle lines and prepare to fight against Benjamin at this wicked city of Gibeah. Verse 21, then the children of Benjamin came out of Gibeah, and on that day cut down to the ground 22,000 men of the Israelites. So Benjamin comes out of Gibeah to defend the city, and in spite of their much inferior numbers, outnumbered more than 5-1, still Benjamin wins. And it seems that they almost kill as many Israelites as were in their own army. Remember, they only had 26,000 in their army and then 700 from Gibeah, so 26,700. And they kill almost that many of Israel. Now, since Gibeah had committed this moral outrage, and Benjamin was defending them, Why didn't the Lord give Israel the victory against Benjamin? Well, remember that this was all Israel's plan. The Lord was only given a small part. They said, "Here, Lord, your little corner of this whole thing is to tell us who should go first." Well, the Lord didn't want a little corner of the thing. He wanted to be the center of it. And not to mention, remember that while they're all up in arms about this moral outrage done at Gibeah, this rape of this concubine until she died, remember that in Israel, they had people from Dan to Beersheba. And remember, Dan was that city of Dan who had left their tribal territory, gone rebelliously to a territory that didn't belong to them, and had stolen a bunch of idolatrous gods and were worshiping those idols even then. And yet there were people from that city of Dan in the Israelite army. People who had done an outrage against the Lord and who deserved to be wiped out just as much as the Benjamites did. And remember, where had Dan stolen the idols from? They had stolen them from Micah, a man of Mount Ephraim. And people from Micah's town, another town that deserved to be wiped out, are probably also there in the army of Israel. So if Benjamin deserved destruction because of what Gibeah did, didn't the whole nation deserve destruction and defeat for what the men of Dan and the men of Micah's city had done? And I think the Lord is trying to point this out to them by allowing them to be defeated. Verse 22, "And the people, that is, the men of Israel, encouraged themselves and again formed the battle line at the place where they had put themselves in array on the first day." So they say, "Come on, guys, we can do it. We got defeated this day, we'll win another day." And so they set up their battle lines again to go to war the next day. Verse 23, "Then the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening, and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I again draw near for battle against the children of my brother Benjamin?' And the Lord said, 'Go up against him.'" So they go and weep before the Lord and ask him if they should go to war against Benjamin again. Now notice a few things about this. I mean, this is good that they're weeping before the Lord and they're asking him if they should go to the battle. But notice that they're again doing it after they already made their plan. They already encouraged themselves. They already set up their battle lines again against Benjamin. And then they go and weep before the Lord and ask if they should go to battle. Well, they've already prepared to go to battle. Not to mention, why didn't they ask if they should go to battle against Benjamin in the first place? Why did they ask now after they'd already done it? And also notice, very significantly, what they didn't ask. They didn't ask why the Lord had allowed this defeat in the first place. The Lord and his law had been very specific. If they were serving him, if he was pleased with them, if they were doing what was right, he would give them victory in war. But if they were not doing what was right, if they were not pleasing him, then he would bring defeat on them. So since the Lord had been very specific about this, the fact that they had lost meant that the Lord was angry about something. The Lord was upset about something. There was some disobedience in their own ranks that needed taking care of. So why didn't they ask the Lord why they had been defeated? Because if they had asked, they may well have gotten the answer. And I think the bottom line is that they didn't want the answer. They didn't want to know what they had done wrong because they didn't want to straighten it out. Now notice this, that they also admitted that Benjamin is their brother. "Should I go to war against my brother, Benjamin?" Well, they hadn't treated him very brotherly in the first place. Now the Lord answers this question too. Go up against him. Yes, go to war. Benjamin deserved defeat for the wickedness among them. But once again, he doesn't answer the questions they ought to have asked, but didn't. So though he tells them to go to war, the problem among them still isn't taken care of. Verse 24. "So the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day." So they obeyed, they prepared for war, and they approached Benjamin to attack them again on the second day. Verse 25. "And Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah on the second day, and cut down to the ground 18,000 more of the children of Israel. All these drew the sword." So again, the result is a Benjamite victory. And another large number of Israelites lose their lives in this battle. And yet Benjamin's losses, I think, are nothing in comparison. They're minimal. No doubt they lost some. but largely the slaughter was on the Israelite side. Verse 26. Then all the children of Israel, that is, all the people, went up and came to the house of God and wept. They sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening, and they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. So the Israelites are finally learning a better way of going about it. They don't encourage themselves and drop their battle lines and decide what they're going to do and then go to the Lord and ask what to do. No, the first thing they do after this defeat is go before the Lord. The sons of Israel, their representatives, and all the people represented by these representatives, they went to the house of God, which again was pitched at Shiloh at this point, the tabernacle, the movable tent. And all that day they sit before the Lord. They fast, they don't eat anything until evening. They offer burnt offerings and peace offerings. They're seeking Him. What they should have done in the first place, this should have been what they did, verse 1 of this chapter. They're finally doing it, but it's kind of late. Verse 27. So the children of Israel inquired of the Lord. The Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. So they inquire of the Lord, and we're told here how it is that they are inquiring of Him, and that is that the Ark was there at that time. It was there at Shiloh again in the tabernacle. Verse 28, and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease? And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. So we learn that not only is the Ark there at Shiloh, but Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, so in other words, Aaron's grandson, was the high priest before the Ark in those days. And this tells us just how soon after the Israelites came into the land of Canaan this was. Because Phinehas had been there in the gathering in the wilderness under Moses. Phinehas was a hero, in fact, from the book of Numbers. If we read Numbers chapter 25 and verse 6, during the terrible incident when the younger generation, the faithful generation that served the Lord, when they had been led astray, their one great failure in the matter of Baal Peor, where the young women of Midian had led some of the men of Israel astray by saying, I will have sex with you if you will worship my gods. And some of them had done it. Numbers 25, verse 6, we read, and indeed, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Now when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her body. And no doubt they were lying together when he did it. So the plague was stopped among the children of Israel. And those who died in the plague were 24,000. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Phinehas the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, has turned back my wrath from the children of Israel, because he was zealous with my zeal among them, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my zeal. Therefore say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace, and it shall be to him and his descendants after him a covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God, and made atonement for the children of Israel. So this was when Phinehas was a zealous young man, and he struck this blow for the Lord that pleased the Lord, his zeal for the Lord. Now he's an old man, he's the high priest. His father Eleazar and his grandfather Aaron are dead. But he is there, the high priest, in the midst of all this mess. So they inquire through him. Now the high priest had in his breastplate, on his high priestly garments, a pouch in which were found the Urim and the Tumim. And that was a way of asking the Lord questions. You'd ask him a question, either a yes or no question, or an innocent or guilty question. And then you'd reach into the pouch, and the stone you found in the pouch, either Urim or Tumim, would answer the question. Urim meaning lights, and Tumim perfections. Lights brought guilt to light, or said yes. Tumims indicated innocence, or meant no. So the Lord would answer through this Urim and Tumim, whichever one he drew out of the breastpiece. But this only worked for the high priest, and only when using the Urim and Tumim. I mean, if you tried to set this up yourself, the Lord wouldn't answer, because you're not Israel's high priest. So don't get some silly thought about doing something like this yourself. But they asked the Lord what they should do. Now notice this time they don't already have a plan and ask the Lord to rubber stamp it or have some small part of it. They ask the Lord for a plan. Shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease? So the last two times they've been already to battle and just asked the Lord to rubber stamp it. This time they actually ask him if they should do it or not. But notice once again, they ask what they should do, but they don't ask what the Lord is doing. They don't ask why he's letting them be defeated. They don't ask what it is they have done that displeased him. No. No, they refuse to learn the lesson he was teaching them through these defeats. So at this point, the Lord gives up on it. He's made his point. He's wiped out many of them to show them that he's not pleased with them either. But he is certainly not pleased with Benjamin and their defense of this wicked city of Gibeah. So he tells them to go to battle again, and this time he's going to give them the victory. So he's willing to do that, even though they never did ask him the right question and get the actual answer as to what it was that was displeasing him and causing him to let them be defeated. But I think we can make a pretty good guess what it was, and maybe they could too. That was why they didn't want to ask. Verse 29, then Israel set men in ambush all around Gibeah. So this time, they don't just go to battle, they act more cleverly. And they set up an ambush around Gibeah. Hidden men ready to attack the city. Then verse 30, and the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day, and put themselves in battle array against Gibeah as at the other times. So they act like they're doing everything the same way, setting up their battle lines against Gibeah. So Gibeah won't know that they have a new plan this time. Verse 31, so the children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city. They began to strike down and kill some of the people, as at the other times, in the highways, one of which goes up to Beth-El and the other to Gibeah, and in the field, about 30 men of Israel. So Benjamin sees this, and so they go out of the city against the people to battle like they did before. And again, they seem to succeed at first. They're striking down Israelites, as they did the previous times, although they've just gotten a few of them at this point. Verse 32, and the children of Benjamin said, they are defeated before us, as at first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee and draw them away from the city to the highways. So Benjamin's convinced. They think this is a repeat of what happened the previous 2 days, and they're ready for another great victory. Meanwhile, the Israelites decide, this is our chance. We'll flee before the Benjamites and draw them out of the city and give our ambush a chance to act unhindered. Verse 33, so all the men of Israel rose from their place and put themselves in battle array at Baal Tamar. Then Israel's men in ambush burst forth from their position in the plain of Geba. So Israel flees from Benjamin, but this time they rally themselves back into battle array at Baal Tamar, which means Lord of the Palms, a place near Gibeah, obviously. And meanwhile, while they've done this, they've gone off to this new location to battle, and the Benjamites have chased them. Well, now that the Benjamites have left the city, the ambush comes out of hiding and strikes against Gibeah. Verse 34, and 10,000 select men from all Israel came against Gibeah, and the battle was fierce. But the Benjamites did not know that disaster was upon them. So they had put 10,000 chosen men, in this ambush. And when the Benjamite army leaves the city to fight Israel at Baal Tamar, the ambush comes out of hiding and attacks Gibeah. But the battle is so fierce that Benjamin is too busy to notice what's going on behind them. Verse 35, the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel, and the children of Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjamites. All these drew the sword. So the outcome of this whole thing, we're given the outcome, we're kind of giving away the ending before it happens, that the Lord caused Benjamin to be defeated before Israel at this point. Remember that when we started out, Benjamin had an army of 26,700 men. And here in this one day, 25,100 of them die in the battle. Verse 36, so the children of Benjamin saw they were defeated. The men of Israel had given ground to the Benjamites because they relied on the men in ambush whom they had set against Gibeah. So Benjamin realizes they're defeated. And then we go back and we review how the defeat happened. in the battle. And once again, as I said before, Israel had withdrawn from before Benjamin, trusting in their ambush against the city. Verse 37, and the men in ambush quickly rushed upon Gibeah. The men in ambush spread out and struck the whole city with the edge of the sword. So the ambush, as soon as Benjamin left, they hurried out from their concealment and they rushed on Gibeah. And they executed all the people in the city, which had been everybody who wasn't a warrior, the children, the elderly, and the women. They wiped them all out, execute the people of Gibeah. And so this wicked city comes to its deserved destruction. Verse 38, now the appointed signal between the men of Israel and the men in ambush was that they would make a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city. So they had agreed on a signal between the main body of the Israelite army and these men of ambush. And that is, the Israelites' army will know the ambush has succeeded and Gibeah has been destroyed when the ambushers set the city on fire with a great bonfire of flame, and this would cause a huge pillar of smoke, and the Israelites will see it and know that Gibeah has been paid back for their wickedness. Verse 39, whereupon the men of Israel would turn in battle. Now Benjamin had begun to strike and kill about 30 of the men of Israel, for they said, surely they are defeated before us, as in the first battle. So Israel was giving way before Benjamin, and as they were doing so, about 30 of them were struck down. And this deceives Benjamin. They think they're winning the day, just like they did on the first 2 days. Verse 40, but when the cloud began to rise from the city in a column of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and there was the whole city going up in smoke to heaven. So when the ambush succeeds and when they set fire to the city, flame and a huge pillar of smoke rises from the city. And Benjamin, finally, it's significant enough, obvious enough, that in spite of the battle, Benjamin looks behind them. And they see their retreat, the place they were defending, the place they would go back to at the end of the battle, on fire behind them. Verse 41, and when the men of Israel turned back, the men of Benjamin panicked, for they saw the disaster had come upon them. So Israel stopped fleeing at this point and turned back to fight once they got the signal. And Benjamin are alarmed. They panic because they realize the Israelite army was just faking it, running away from them. And they realize that their escape is cut off from behind them by the city being destroyed. Calamity has come upon them. Verse 42, therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel in the direction of the wilderness, but the battle overtook them. And whoever came out of the cities, they destroyed in their midst. So the Benjamites turn their backs to the men of Israel, and they try to flee to the wilderness. But they are not able to escape. The army of Israel catches up with them. And it seems that as they flee, they pass cities of Benjamites, and the people of those cities come out of the cities to flee too, and are destroyed along with the Benjamite army. So disaster comes on Benjamin at last, but not after several defeats of the armies of Israel. But the Lord did indeed want Benjamin, and especially the men of Gibeah, punished for the wickedness that had happened among them. And this finally happened at last. So the Israelite people responded to the moral outrage done by some men of Gibeah by attacking the whole tribe of Benjamin. Twice they attacked them and are defeated, and yet they did it with only the most cursory of inquiries of the Lord. Now when Israel was defeated before the Benjamites, they should have asked the Lord why they were defeated, what was wrong, what they needed to correct about themselves. But they refused. Perhaps they well knew their own sins and didn't want to be accused for them. Or perhaps they just didn't care. They were so focused on the task they had set themselves that they didn't care for any self-examination and why the Lord might be upset with them. So the Lord finally relented and allowed them the victory in spite of their refusal to look at their own sin. Is this sometimes the case with us? That we're so busy trying to win a victory for the Lord that we refuse to view our own lives and what might be displeasing to the Lord in our lives? Well, may we not do this. May all of us look at our lives and say, am I living to please the Lord or not?
God deals with the sin and debauchery of these men, not unlike how he dealt with the wicked men of Sodom and Gomorrah. This was a city and tribe of God's own people, Israel, showing that God demanded his relationship with them to be pure and unadulterated. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on civil war. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Israel Regrets. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word more, you know and love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also offer a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.